stop with the first six game stuff. They're all tough games. You're not supposed to be that good. So this whole, well, you know, they're all tough games. Forget the first six games. Look at all 17. If you're not supposed to be that good, then you're going to be wondering, well, Ken, how do you get four wins? How do you get five wins? Where do the five wins come from? Where do they come on that schedule? They're all tough. There's not going to be some magical fairy that gives us more wins after the first six games other than, okay, some of the teams we're playing might not be that good. I have no idea what you... As of right now, yeah, we think that... Was that yesterday or is that right now?
That's yesterday.
Okay, for a second I thought I was going to have to give an update. There's, as of right now, Vikings, we assume the Bears are going to be better, but they're at the end of the season, right? So that's going to be tougher. Well, yeah, I mean, who knows what a record's going to be by then, right? Vikings, Packers, Lions, all supposed to be good.
How many games are we underdogs right now of
probably
the 17?
Most, if not all of them. But
what about Tennessee on December 7th?
You might be the... Well, I'm not sure. We'll see how Cam Ward is throwing by then. But probably in most, if not all of them. But, I mean, my God, this whole, like, well, you know, after the first six games, we keep making a big damn deal about the first six games. I go, well, hey, I mean... Are we guaranteed that everybody on the Bengals is going to be healthy week one? We're never guaranteed that. The Ravens are probably going to be about a 15-win team this year, so I don't know if there's going to be any change there. Packers, Jordan Love's really good. The Lions, hey, you know what? There might be some questions about losing Ben Johnson and losing Aaron Glenn there that they got to figure out in the early parts of the season. Not that you're going to beat any of these teams, but are they going to be the juggernauts we think they're going to be? I kind of know where the Browns are going to be. But I don't think there's any sort of crazy let-up after six games where it's like, okay, now we can take it easy and start to stack some wins. John Greco joining us right now on the Fan Hotline. Hello, John.
Good morning, guys. Good to be with you this morning.
You can be honest with me. Did that entire diatribe make any sense to you as a former NFLer?
Yeah, it did. It did. And as a current fan, it sure did. It's hard to, play the schedule game this time of year. You know, we've had one padded practice under our belt now, so there's a different excitement. But yeah, when I played, not so much. It was more like, oh, who do we have on the opener? You know that for months, obviously, and then you're thinking, my God, what defensive tackle do I have to block the whole game and get in a fist fight in a phone booth with for 60 minutes? But yeah, now that I can zoom out a little bit and I'm a fan and I don't wake up every morning and I'm like, who's that one guy? And his backup, yeah, I start to schedule peak. So I think you made some good points there.
Who would you start the season with a quarterback? Sorry, Tone, you can go next.
Who would I? Joe Flacco. I mean, I think we've kind of known that and talked about that. So, putting the schedule aside, I think that making that move – proves that, like, hey, we're early on, we're trying to put the best product out there, put people in the best opportunity, the best position to win games, galvanize the unit, and give some of these vets that stuck around potentially because of, a quote-unquote plan that was in place to try to win games. So I think it's got to be Flacco. And Pickett, he doesn't have a lot of the individual success that Joe Flacco did, but he's still a veteran. Guys that I've spoken with and heard from that are still in the locker room have faith in him. And now obviously you're dealing with the hamstring, so we'll see what that does for his the plan for him in the rotation. But I think it's Joe Flacco, a proven veteran, a guy that can go out there week one and execute the offense.
All right, John, we love having you on because we know we're going to get unbridled honesty when it comes to this stuff from a player's perspective or a former player's perspective. So when somebody like you who played the game at the highest level hears guys like us and shows like us debating the statistics, the completions, the incompletions, and the overall numbers from a training camp practice where nobody can really be tackled or taken down, what do you think about that type of discussion?
Anthony, that's a good question. If you'd asked me 6 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have probably ignored the question, laughed, to myself, and thought you guys were idiots. But
Sanders was 9-9 yesterday. 9-9 yesterday. Yeah, two touchdowns.
And hey, you got to think. I'm more in your boat now than I was when I played. So I'm excited about that. And again, we had one padded practice. So, during spring, I don't really care who's completing the ball. What I don't want to see is, short hopping passes or airmailing passes over a guy's head, or just, missing wide open guys in 7-on-7. But now when, I don't want to say the bullets are live, because they're not, to your point, nobody's getting touched, but you can kind of see, and there would always be like that false sense of security when I would play. We'd be like, oh, hey, we threw a nice deep, 30, 40 yard pass there, or executed a play action and somebody hit a home run, and we were really, distributing the ball, making a lot of completions. And then you watch the tape and you're like, oh God, four of those would have been sacks in the game. Or maybe somebody pulled off and it could have been an interception, but for whatever the drill was, it was more of an offensive focus. And the defender didn't make a play. So, I guess to kind of circle it all back, I'm excited. I don't mind the talk now, because that's all we have right now until at least the first preseason game, which is in what, 10 days, 11 days. I think it's nice to get excited about a young player that has so much talk around him, and there's so much uncertainty and wonder, what is this quarterback room going to look like come September? I think it's okay. It could be worse. He could be 1 for 9 with 2 interceptions. And then what are we talking about today, right now in this conversation? So yeah, hey, that's a great practice. How does he stack great throws and great completions and practices on top of one another? Because right now it doesn't matter, guys. He could be 100 for 100 this week, but how does it look in the preseason when he's actually getting tackled and hit, and guys are making plays and the speed is ramped up just a little bit more? What does he look like then? How is he executing then?
John Greco joining us on the show. John, we've talked about this before, about consulting with veterans, but it's been a while, so I need to brush up with you again on it. Like, say Kevin decides to start the season with Dylan Gabriel, or halfway through the year he goes, it's time for Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders. Does he have a conversation with veterans before either one of those moves, maybe certain veterans, guys like Joel, et cetera?
I would have to say, absolutely. I've been on teams and in situations where I was part of those conversations, and then I've been in, years where I was not, but you kind of sense what's happening through osmosis in the locker room, like hearing from maybe captains or, a guy like Joe Thomas or Josh McCown. There was like a one conduit between the head coach and the rest of the locker room, or the rest of the veterans, the head coach would talk to a committee of veterans or key players, starters. So I just thinking about, guys in this locker room that have played a number of years, a number of snaps, I think Kevin Stefanski is the type of guy that would kind of have that transparency with the team and some of those key players, because we all see it. He's the best at being, cryptic, and that's between us. We're day to day. We'll deal with that internally.
Yeah.
He's among the best of that. So I do think behind the scenes, in the principal meetings, in the powwows, he is conveying that message to key veterans. And look, those guys, you've heard me say this before, when you get a message like that from the head coach, there's conversations upstairs behind the scenes that the players probably aren't a part of. And then they get that message from the head coach, and then it's time to roll. There's no time to think and say, well, is that the best decision? Are we really doing this? You could be thinking that in your head, but at the end of the day, you have to roll. You have to get ready for whoever's in there, whatever that move might be. So I would expect, yes, they have those conversations, but there's really no time to think or react or debate it. You have to go out there and go to work.
John Greco with us on the hotline. Was it noticeable when you were doing your thing back in the NFL training camp days to see players make the leap? Is that something you could tell in training camp, or does that not really manifest, until down the road? We're talking about guys have already been in the league. Maybe they were rookies the year before or second year players, and now they start to become something different. Or is that something that you'll only really see once the season begins?
No, I think you absolutely can see that in training camp, and that's a great question. There's a lot of young guys that you're wondering, you know, what does it look like between year one, year two? You know, for the incoming rookies, guys you drafted, it's like, yeah, you've seen their college highlights and you've seen what they've done in their college, the collegiate resume. And you know, you've been practicing against them in shorts and t-shirts the whole spring, and they look like world beaters. And you're like, okay, what's this guy going to look like in pads? Because you know, everybody's different. So you kind of take inventory of today's practice, the week's practices. Then you start getting into preseason games, and guys kind of jump off the tape and make splashes. So yeah, it was exciting to see that, and especially when you do these joint practices. You know, it's like the first time that you can go out to battle and you're not going against your own guys. And you know, love them or hate them, it really gives you a snapshot of where you're at and what you need to work on. And you can hear it, you know, you're split the whole day, obviously, until you come together for some teamwork. But, you know, you get in the locker room and you could see, like, you know, offensively, hey, we had a great day. And the defense, you know, maybe got beat up a little bit or vice versa. And then you look on that tape in the team room at night, and the head coach says, look at this guy. He was making plays all day. You know, he was rallying. He was disrupting in the backfield. He was disruptive in the secondary and in the middle with you know, keeping blockers off of him. Whatever position it was, making catches, making big runs, breaking tackles. And that's when you know, guys start, you know, showing up on your radar, and you're like, okay, this guy, let me pay attention to him a little bit more. And then you see it in the preseasons, and if he's making plays, then the excitement builds. It's like, no, this guy's going to be a playmaker, a game changer for us, and we're going to need him to win more games.
What is a mistake that, like, a rookie QB, I keep asking about the rookies, but I have to, right? John, what's a mistake that a rookie QB, maybe interpersonally or on the field or whatever, can make that will make veterans question him?
I think, I don't want to say not taking it serious, but, well, holding the ball too long, that's kind of something that would drive everybody crazy, speaking from the offensive line standpoint. But I think not being prepared. And look, I get it. There's a lot on their plate, especially as the installs start to, you know, mount or stack up. And then it's like there's more on their plate and they have to, oh, this one easy protection and all the things associated with it. I have that down. Now all of a sudden there's 6, 7, 8 protections, and I have to, you know, there's guys that are pass rushing me now, and there's different blitzes and different looks. When a guy is not prepared, I think that's what is the biggest mistake. So, you know, look, the days are long, but those quarterbacks, I mean, they're not getting touched. It's more of a mental thing for them. And it's, for me, it was like, you know your stuff, execute the huddle, and it starts, it's as simple as that. I hate to say it. You know, get the snap counts consistent and on point, help each other with the calls. And I used to like when those guys would be in our meeting rooms late at night. You know, we'd have a snack together right before bed check. And it was like, let's talk about the day. Let's think about what's coming tomorrow. What can I do better? What do you need from us? You know, just so you can create a cohesive unit. But the biggest mistake for me, Ken, is when guys just kind of mail it in, or they're like, okay, I did enough today. That was good. No, I want to see them preparing for the next day, the next day, the next day, because it really just will help them be a better player.
John, we've seen just quickly baseball and basketball have some potential gambling scandals. We just had it here with speculation about what could be happening with pitchers in a Guardians clubhouse. Do you think the NFL, by and large, is immune to this, or do you think this could happen eventually and will happen eventually to the NFL?
I don't know, Anthony, if the NFL is immune to it. I think maybe I'm just naive. I feel like it would be more obvious in the NFL, but maybe not. You know, I hate, obviously, the investigation that's going on with the Guardians. I'm a fan. I hate to hear it. It sucks. But yeah, the fact of the matter is that gambling and organized crime and all that kind of stuff surrounding that, it's been around for a long time in some of those major, you know, professional sports and collegiate sports. So you hate to see it in the NBA and, you know, obviously college basketball, baseball, but the NFL, I don't know if it's infiltrated it yet. I think it would be hard, you know, like if somebody was like, hey, John, I need you to miss blocks That way, you know, we can cover. I just think it's a little bit more difficult now. You know, maybe quarterbacks, kickers, running backs would be fumbling. You know, I don't know. Guys missing tackles purposely, but I think it would be really difficult to kind of orchestrate that. But does that mean that it's never going to happen or hasn't happened? I can't guarantee that. I don't know.
John, you're a good man and thorough. Thank you very much for the time. All the best.
Gentlemen, happy to be back with you.
John Greco. Find him on Twitter at John_Greco77, even though he doesn't tweet that much, but that's okay. He reads your tweets. He knows what you send him. This is going to be a weird statement to say, but you better go to all the baseball games you possibly can, because it looks like we got a work stoppage coming after the 2026 season. Jeff Passan, who's been, boy, he's been all over everything when it comes to baseball here over the last 24 hours. I did not know Rob Manfred. Actually, no, I did know that Rob Manfred, after I think it was the original stoppage a couple of years ago, started doing a tour of all 30 teams every year. And he met with the Philadelphia Phillies. And this was a story that came out yesterday. But last week, he met with the Phillies. And Bryce Harper, who sat there in a meeting holding a baseball bat, just like gripping a baseball bat, is like somebody would play with their keys or something like that. He's got a baseball bat. So, I mean, Bryce Harper's already kind of a wild card, so that's already going to be a little alarming there. But in conversations that quickly turned into something about a salary cap, Bryce Harper allegedly got up, got face-to-face with Rob Manfred, and said, quote, "Get the bleep out of our clubhouse." The conversation, they call it a confrontation, came in a meeting, one of 30 that Manfred conducts annually in an effort to improve his relations with each team's players. Well, that went the other way in that meeting. That lasted more than an hour. Manfred never explicitly said the word salary cap, sources said. The discussion about the game's economics raised the ire of Harper, one of the most influential players in the game and obviously a two-time MVP. Harper eventually grew frustrated and said if MLB were to propose a cap and hold firm to it, players are, quote, are not scared to lose 162 games, sources said. Harper stood up, walked toward the middle of the room, faced Manfred and said, if you want to speak about that, you can get the F out of our clubhouse. Said the word. Manfred, accordingly, did not back down. And of all people, Nick Castellanos tried to cool things off where he goes, I have several other questions here. Because, of course, in any one of these situations, it's going to be Nick Castellanos. We are headed towards a real problem here. Now, I know that, you know, there was a lot of big market people. My buddy Zach Gelb, who's on Infinity Sports Network. I mean, he's a New York guy. His dad produced Mike and the Mad Dog, for crying out loud. I mean, that's royalty there. He was like, good for Harper, good for Harper. I go, that is not good for about 26 fan bases out there. But
He's taken the players over the owners, which in the past that has made sense in other sports.
And so many times you really want to, because, you know, we are part of the proletariat in so many ways. Like, you want to take the player's side. However, you know, Bryce Harper has what, a $300 million contract? So he's kind of different from your everyday players who are maybe a couple of guys from the Guardians, obviously, bad example now, scratching by, quote unquote, but losing an opportunity to make real life-changing money there, or generational money, I should say. Not life-changing, it changes your life, but generational money. Bryce Harper's got multiple generations of Harpers taken care of now. But I also think that I don't want to twist this up and go after Bryce Harper, because the salary cap's a salary cap. That's always been an issue we've talked about. It obviously is more important, and I think that they should really focus on the floor. I mean, if you're making all this money, and Major League Baseball is bragging all the time, we make all this money. Every time people start to talk about Major League Baseball dying, well, we made $12 billion last year. I mean, that's a number that's thrown in this article here. They made $12 billion last year. Well, if you guys are all making $12 billion together, why do we have $80 million payrolls in Major League Baseball here? So there would have to be a floor.
Yeah, listen, I want a cap and a floor. I do wonder what a floor would do to, you know, the salary structure of Major League Baseball. When I look right now, and like the average payroll in baseball is like $170 million. Now, that's skewed big time by the Mets and the Dodgers and the Yankees and Philadelphia and even Toronto. Man, look at their payroll. Mm-hmm. That skews it because you have all these teams at the bottom. Miami, 68 million, billion, million.
68
Athletics,
million?
77. The White Sox, 78. Pittsburgh, 88. Tampa Bay, 90. The Guardians, 102. If you look at all the allocations. So I wonder, what does a floor do to the Guardians? What does it do? Because, it means that the Dolans or whoever owns the team, maybe the Dolans sell immediately if that was the case, that means that we would be at a threshold, but we'll just be at the bottom of that.
Yes.
And so will a bunch of other teams. They'll just be at the bottom. So everybody will get raised to that point. Would that effectively make some of the players more expensive, you know, towards the bottom, because every team needs to get to that floor? I don't know. I don't know what that would do.
My thought was,
would it really materially make that much different is what I wonder.
Well, my question is, not my point, but my question is, would they even be choosier about who gets to come up? Because now it's like, well, you have to meet a salary floor. Like, how does that work when it comes to how much time you have in Major League Baseball and what that correlates to your salary? Because if you have to meet a salary floor, then I would imagine you get choosier about who you bring up. Because now all of a sudden I might have to pay. If I'm going to a floor and I have to meet a floor, I could bring in a bunch of young players and meet a $91 million floor. Say it's a $91 million floor. I can bring in a bunch of young guys and pay them $91 million. But if I'm only at the floor, then I'm just going to keep complaining that my team's at the floor. And still those salaries at the top are still going to go higher.
Of course.
That's why you can't. It's hard to say just a floor. I think the floor is more important to start. But I think you really can't have one without the other.
So I asked the question because you said your guy Gelb is immediately advocating for the players in this scenario. I don't know what that does for fans. What do I get?
It's just the first one I saw.
Yeah. What do I get out of, you know, Bryce Harper sticking his chest out, by the way, who's made money? And then I look at the sports with a cap, like, you know, the NBA now basically has that second apron. We're the only team in the second apron. The Cavs this year. I think people realize that. But with that said, we still have players making $70 million a year now, and that's just the start. Devin Booker and SGA, that's just the start. In the next season at this point, this is going to be a whole cluster of players making $70 million a year, and there's a cap. So players are still going to get paid. I mean, maybe you'd argue the middle class might get squeezed a little bit because that's starting to happen now in the NBA. So I could understand you being upset about that. I just would wonder in this case, we just hear the owners and baseball and Manfred, and could they lock out the players or whatever? I don't know how the owners are all on the same page here. The reason I say that is because what does Paul Dolan want?
I think Paul Dolan would actually be...
What does Miami, what do the Marlins want? What do their owners want? It's very different, I would think, from what the Dodgers owners want.
Don't we have David Sampson coming on Thursday, right before the trade deadline? I want to ask him about that.
They can't possibly be unified on this either, could they?
Well, I think that a guy like Paul Dolan, at the risk of being accused of carrying water for the guy, I know I called you Anthony Dolan a couple of weeks ago. You called me Kenny Haslam, which was funny. At the risk of being told I'm carrying water for Paul Dolan, I would imagine Paul Dolan would want it to be a little bit more equitable where, hey, I've ran a responsible franchise, and he has. I know that we got this Class A situation with Ortiz, but we'll get to that coming up at 8:43. I know that you could say, oh, I've ran a responsible organization. I've done right. We've drafted fairly well. We've made the right trades for the most part. We've gotten ourselves an opportunity to get that close, but I'm not willing to go into the red. Well, you know what? This is the dirty secret of it. None of these other teams are willing to go into the red. And frankly, and I don't want to be morbid about this, unless their owner is passing away. I mean, you remember the Illich thing, what went on in San Diego without us knowing. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's... They're not willing to go into the red. And if Paul Dolan is exactly like that, then you got to get something figured out, because I think Paul Dolan would be frustrated with the Pittsburgh Pirates, with the Miami Marlins, where, hey, you have a new stadium down there in Miami, nobody goes to it, you have what you wanted, you don't field a proper baseball team. You know, the Pirates, it can't be healthy for the game of baseball if you have a fan base talking about having to force themselves to talk about trading a guy like Paul Skeens a year into his professional career. That's asinine for a lot of people. Like, we'd be losing our minds. Hell, I'm about to lose my mind over talking about trading Stephen Kwan with 2 years left in arbitration to go, for crying out loud. So I think that he needs to see the forest for the trees and understand, like, hey, we got to come together on both. There has to be a cap. Okay, the owners seem to really want a cap. You got that. I don't know how you take guys like Shohei Ohtani, who has how many millions of dollars? Or Juan Soto, who has $765 million or whatever it is coming to him over the next 15 years. How do you subtract from that? How do you grandfather him in with the other ones? They're the ones who can do the math. I can't. But you also do need to have a floor. Because you can't have, I don't think you can have one without the other. And that's why I think that you're going to have a serious, and I think nobody's surprised by this, you're going to have a serious work stoppage coming up after the end of next year. Because you're looking at more television money coming in, because they're probably going to nationalize and make a deal. So you assume that there's going to be more money under there. At least the Players Association assumes there's going to be more money.
I do wonder about that, because we've talked a lot about how much the Dolans and all these other small markets have lost because of the local TV money situation, which has been pretty dire.
So if you look like you're going to have a light at the end of the tunnel where there's going to be from a national contract with nationalized broadcast that ends up going regional, if there's a revenue share, which I would assume there has to be. Now, I think that Yes Network and SNY.
Yeah, they'd have something to say about
it. Would have something to say about that. Is it Spectrum who carries the Dodgers?
I think so. Yeah,
I know they carry the Lakers. I think that they might have something to say about that. So maybe they're out of that loop. Maybe they're not part of that rev share since there's such big markets, such big teams. I'm not sure. That's something that they're going to have to get figured out. But if you guys are sharing in these profits, okay, where's the profits going? So that's why a floor would have to come in, but a cap is going to have to come in as well. Could the Class A allegations actually affect the fandom of the Guardians? 216-474-0092. I want to know from you guys. Because we got into it. Actually, it was Owen and Lima who really got into a knockdown dragout. They got into it big time at the beginning of the show. And you know what? There's a lot more passion out there from the listeners on Shedeur Sanders or the Browns or anything else, man. I'm not getting as much on the Guardians. I think that's a scary thing. It's a scary thing. I think there's been a malaise over these last several months, not just with the season kind of going flopping and twitching, but the non-moves in the offseason, the possibilities of trading away household names. I mean, Shane Bieber's still a household name. I can understand the reasoning behind that. I've made peace with that. Even last year before the injury happened so early in the season. Stephen Kwan having technically two years left to arbitration, a year and a half left to arbitration. I think that rubs people the wrong way big time. People have made arguments for trading him. But I don't know how that helps out your legend in Jose Ramirez. It doesn't. And now we have these allegations here, or this investigation, we should say. And when you have Emmanuel Clase, who's been a high-profile guy for your fan base, I mean, Luis Ortiz, we had just got him, and you thought it was a one-off thing. And you have now Emmanuel Clase. I mean, there's been a lot of theories thrown out there here over the last 18 hours. But now that you have Emmanuel Clase, you know, a lot of people are going, what has happened to this team? And it didn't help last night that Cade Smith got blown up after you're trying to beat the Rockies, a 27-win team coming into last night.
And the guy you traded before the season ends up with three RBIs and, you know, does the damage late. So
yeah, that was tough, too.
So here's what I want to know first, because we did get into it. And Owen came after me. I think it was because I sat here and I said, man, my buddies who are all gamblers and gamble on all this stuff, they didn't even seem that outraged. And I don't think it's going to stop them from gambling. And Owen was like, but what about the fans? What about the actual fans? If they feel like the game is compromised, if they feel like a closer, because a closer is very different from just a starting pitcher grounding some balls. Like a closer, you're coming in to leverage situations, game on the line, you get behind one batter, especially in a playoff game, which we don't have any allegations, anything yet about the playoffs last year, even
though
he did give up
that we know of.
8 earned runs in 8 innings and was untouchable all season.
Reckless speculation.
Well, I don't know how, honestly, if you found out that stymied an ALCS run or a World
Series
run. Well,
you
run
them out of the organization.
Well, I don't know what...
I'll join those guys who stand outside the gate at the end of every season, and we'll be out there for a different reason.
It would be...
It won't be for autographs.
No, I'm not going to go that far for crying out loud, but...
If he threw... ALCS, absolutely.
He would need security.
He can't be with the organization anymore. That's for damn sure.
Organization. I mean,
he can't be in.
You know what you sound like right now? I hate to make the comparison. Not in our club. He's got to go.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, boys. I know you hate it when I do the Sopranos lines.
That's an understatement.
Save it for the podcast.
So, Owen, I understand if that came out. It's just so early, so we're jumping to wild conclusions. But I don't know, maybe it's the apathy of the season. Maybe it's that my buddies didn't really think this team was going anywhere.
I think that's what it is.
What pissed me off was you said all that, and I don't think you took into account Joe Q fan who goes more than you do right now, mm-hmm. right? And uses this as a thing that I bond with my children over and that. And then you called me delusional, and that pissed me off too. But at the end of the day, I guess you were right, Anthony, because how many people have called in about it? It's been almost 3 hours now since we started the show. It's been 2 hours since we had that fight, and I thought, well, they're going to show up. These guys are going to show up and back me up. The real Guardians fans will be here to tell Anthony and his little degenerate friends that they are out of place and out of context, and apparently I was wrong.
Because I think
apparently
a lot,
none of you care in Cleveland.
But it is almost the same. Like, when we get to December last year, let's call it what it is. It was dead. It was dead. Dead on the phones, dead on social media, dead on the air for a lot of people because the Browns were DOA. So people didn't care. And that type of apathy is scary to any fan, to any owner in professional sports. And I think a lot of people have just gone, what's the next thing that you guys are going to do? Which the Guardians have been the responsible franchise in the city for the last 25 years, if you could say anything for them. They've been the responsible ones. So when you have this, there's a lot of people saying some things who I think have misdirected their anger. As of right now, we could find out more, but...
Well, towards the manager and towards the organization?
Yes,
I will say, Zach Meisel, in his story for The Athletic, he does say that not only did the team know that the rumors were starting to float around or whatever, but then they used him. They used him or put him in the bullpen.
They haven't known for a month.
This was
the weekend, right?
Yeah, so it did open up the question, like, why would you use him? Would you talk to him? Would you talk to his agent? Like, those are the questions I would ask. Like, I do want to know without, like, contaminating his headspace, because... Would you pitch differently if all of a sudden you knew you were being investigated?
Well, if he doesn't know that he's being investigated, I don't know that I'd run him out there, because what if he does it again?
That's the other problem, right?
They blew one on the first game Saturday, and then they end up winning, but it was a 6-4 game or 8-6. It was a two-run game, right?
Are you asking allegedly throw it in the dirt on purpose?
Well, if this is obvious, we have no clue what they're actually investigating, right. But the Twitter sleuths have... went out and put up the videos, and it's been him throwing balls into the dirt, 4 feet in front of the home plate.
Yeah.
So no, those are pretty egregious things. And if he doesn't know that he's being investigated for that, and we're using him in a leverage situation, and now we know.
Could he help blow another game?
Is he blowing another game when we're actually in a race right now? They're actually in the race after they bounce back from the 10-game losing streak.
That's why it's hard for the organization right now, because they're clearly unable to say much at all.
Yeah.
But me as a fan, you as a fan, like we just had in this setting over the last minute, we had 7 more questions that haven't been asked or addressed or allowed to ask.
There's another question out there that a lot of people are saying that, do you want to address it on the air? About would be the only reason you would actually do anything like this, and you would say, okay,
if you were
I can
him
understand
and,
it.
And he was owed $6 million next year, why would he jeopardize
all of that? No. Oh, yeah, yeah. The only valid reason you would see that is...
You would wonder who else is he involved with and...
Being influenced by someone that's not in Cleveland.
We've all seen organized crime shows and movies over the years, and it would make sense. Like, if you were worried about your family,
Finally bring up Goodfellas, and I won't kill you for it, because that was part of the plot of it, right?
Because you could look at him And because, you know, we talked about on the phone yesterday and we were going, well, you don't see this in other sports. You know, it's like, well, if it happened, like if they said, hey, Patrick Mahomes has to do this, that, and the other, or there's going to be serious problems. Okay, Patrick Mahomes is one of the major celebrities of professional sports. You would immediately call the FBI and you would immediately snuff that out. But when you have guys who are from the Dominican Republic who are not,
they're not spending their offseason here.
No.
They're going back, right?
Emmanuel Clase is an all-star, but these aren't necessarily household names. And you're looking at them going, hey, I'm not asking you to blow the game. I'm telling you to throw the first ball in the dirt. There's a difference there. And you, as sick as it is, if your family was in any sort of a troublesome situation with these type of people, you'd have to do what you have to do. Now, again, his family may be back in another country. Luis Ortiz's family, this is all, you know, this things that we wonder about. Okay, well, you could put it under investigation just because you're under investigation. See, that's why I didn't like today, it was a slip up. He accidentally said suspended yesterday. It's like, well, wait a minute, let's get this figured out here. Because that would be a legitimate, as sick as it is, would be a legitimate reason. It's weird because you don't hope that's the case because you don't want people's families to be in danger here. But at the same time, if they're found to be egregious errors on purpose, well, then we have a problem within the organization and these guys might have to go. Because how on earth, I mean, let's be serious. If these guys are found guilty by a Major League Baseball investigation, you're the Cleveland Guard. You cannot run these guys out in front of your own fans.
Well, so we are at the level.
You cannot put them out there in front of your own fans again.
I'm trying to classify this the right way. I don't think, even though they're two pitchers, they happen, their lockers are right next to each other. Zach Meisel had more, you know, reporting on this that they put plenty of hobbies together. They talked about, you know, I think raising chickens or whatever. Okay, the two of them both are from the same place, right? They're from the same place. So is this right now a scandal or is it two loan operators, two, you know,
rogues.
Yeah, two guys going out on their own. Is it just right now an incident? It's not the level of scandal. When it becomes a scandal is, oh, this guy knew or this clubhouse attendant
exactly.
knew or whatever.
How long? It's not a scandal yet. It's two guys who may have been acting improperly within the game. It's if we do find out they knew for a while. If we do find out that other people may have been involved in it, which according to Major League Baseball, nobody else is. So right now it's an incident, but then it would get to a scandal level if we found out other people.
So with
or
Ortiz,
were to move higher up, for God's sakes.
With Ortiz, and this is what this is the good side of the leagues being in bed with the gaming companies. The good side of this is, man, so much more is being caught that never would have gotten caught before.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it because they can see the bets. They can see where the bets come in. And that's triggering. The anomalies are triggering investigations. That's what happened with the first one. And it was two pitches for Ortiz, right?
Right.
There were two pitches. And that's it. The fact that two pitches could trigger a big-time investigation, and then they could bring baseball in, and they could sideline him immediately. Like, that to me is showing that the system can work. That doesn't mean it's foolproof, but it does show that the system can work. I want to know so much more in this case about what triggered it here, because that will determine, I think, how hard the fans are going to be on the organization and the manager when all is said and done.
Well, I want to know what the fans think. Could this alleged possible scandal incident, could it actually affect your Guardians fandom? 216-474-0092, especially if you're a person like Owen who's paying the $50 a month, if you're a season ticket holder, or anything of that nature. Could that actually affect your fandom, depending on the outcome over the next month?